Welcome to the Hidden History Podcast with me, Paul Christian.
We are live. Right, hello everyone. Welcome to Hidden History, the first live stream. There might be a bit of an echo because we've got a few technical issues, but hopefully we've ironed them out by putting my phone quite far away from the speaker and talking quietly. But apart from that, we are professionals. Our history is a pack of lies. What say you, Steve? This is Steve, by the way. He's an old pal of mine from school.
What an intro. Thank you very much.
You can give yourself an intro if you want. I mean, to be honest, I've rarely been on these things. So
I think, to be honest, you've done such a good job that I'll take it and we'll just move on.
Perfect. So, ancient apocalypse, what are your first thoughts?
I mean, it's interesting, obviously. I mean, anything like that is always going to be engaging, even if it's, you know, slightly questionable. But then also, that was the whole point of any kind of theory. It's meant to be questioned. And it's very rarely going to be airtight, particularly when it's based on evidence from thousands of years ago.
Yeah, and talking about that evidence, so do you think he presented much in the way of evidence, or did it tend to be, in your mind, a bit of a leap, should we say?
I think it was a bit of a leap. I mean, what he did present was very compelling, but that could just be a sort of showmanship to it, you know, and obviously it's very singular. It's like, hi, I'm here with an archaeologist, and we're up on a hill somewhere and we've done some seismic readings and we think there's something in this hill. I mean, that's really interesting, but obviously it's not like he's saying, and I've now taken it somewhere and it's been peer reviewed by 20 different people. But you know what's there is interesting enough and, you know, warrants more investigation.
Yeah, I mean, I found the whole thing very entertaining. And I thought the CGI and the camera angles and some of the aerial shots and all the rest of it was really very impressive and obviously made you want to watch it more. I mean, I binged it pretty much in 2 days. I don't know if you watched all of it. I know you'd watched an episode and a half before.
Most of it now, yeah.
Yeah, and it's quite, I mean, you know, when Netflix goes to skip to the next episode, you sort of don't really stop it. Yeah, it had a bit of a so in that sense, I thought it was a bit of a conjuring, really, a bit of a magic trick in a sense, because there was a lot of good stuff to look at and a lot of nice bombastic music and randomly meeting sort of so-called experts down dark corridors with flaming torches and things like that. So, which is all good. But in terms of evidential stuff, I don't know. I'm happy to hear him out, but I'm of the view that that if you were playing a game whereby you had to take a shot every time he mentioned archaeologists or archaeology, I think you'd be quite inebriated by the end. He seems to definitely have a bit of a beef with them, I think.
Yeah, I was going to bring that up. I wasn't sure when we were going to get to this. It's sort of, he definitely thinks that big archaeology is out to get him, yeah. Which is interesting. And the thing is, who knows? I don't know. I don't work in that field. They might be, for all we know, there might be the problem with accusing sort of the establishment of covering of covering up things and coming after you is then you then sound like a nutcase. Even if you're right, and I think he doesn't do himself any favors by keep throwing that one out.
Yeah, it's almost like he had to get his attack in first, really. Because I mean, right from the start, he was saying, you know, people call me a pseudo archaeologist and all that kind of stuff, which is, you know, you can say whatever. I mean, I quite like him. I think he comes across he comes across very well, and he's obviously very passionate, and he's quite an interesting, you know, knowledgeable guy about a lot of what he's talking about. I just think that I don't know. I think he could have gone into it with a bit more of a conciliatory tone. I mean, I know he's written a lot of books, and they've obviously been lambasted by various, you know, sort of debunkers and all that sort of stuff, which I imagine has had a bit of an impact on how he sees them. But I think that if he'd have just presented his information and allowed us to kind of, which he does to a large extent, I think, but if he'd have just done that a bit more with fewer of the main archaeology won't tell you this, main archaeology says this is wrong, all that kind of stuff, I think it probably would have come across slightly less bitter.
Yeah, and I'd say that hasn't done him any favours. I mean, we won't dwell on this part too long. I think we should definitely obviously get onto the core content of it. But it just so happened that I read an article earlier and it says Ancient Apocalypse is the most dangerous show on Netflix was the title. Have you seen that one?
No, I haven't seen that one, but I've seen that the backlash has begun now from as you call it, big archaeology. And even one of the people he spoke to in Malta, who was actually in the series, was has sort of done some slightly cryptic tweets about her involvement and how, you know, the editing and all that sort of stuff. So we'll see. Well, I mean, my view is sort of to close out the kind of, you know, background bit would be that I think introducing the profit motive is quite a good thing, because obviously, if, you know, as the archaeologists, as if they're a homogenous kind of group, but if their argument is that, well, we're not looking for these things that Hancock says are there because there's no financial incentive, it's like, well, if anything, this show does give them that, because they could have a, you know, ancient no-pocalypse kind of rebuttal show, which I think people would watch now as a result of this. So, and that's been my point. I think he's good in that he gets people interested in the subject matter itself from the outset, and then they'll read more about it. I mean, the same thing happened with me when I was a kid and I read Eric von Daniken's Chariots of the Gods, which is nonsense. I mean, it's just that is really pseudo archaeology. That's a guy who looks at a lot of ancient structures and says, how did they build it? They couldn't possibly have built it, even though it's there. And then he says it was aliens that did it. So that's kind of the premise. He does that with every single thing, Nazca lines, pyramids, and the whole shebang. But it got me interested in the individual things that he was writing about. Obviously, at the time, you know, when you're a child, you look at it and you go, oh yeah, it could be aliens. And he's like, no, it definitely isn't. And, but I'm still interested in the Nazca lines, for instance, as a result of that book. So if that's all it achieves, then I think that's a good thing, really.
Well, yeah, I mean, it's the whole, there's no such thing as bad publicity. It's like, obviously there's kind of merit in highlighting certain things. If it gets people interested in archaeology, then it's great. If it gets people reading more about it, and I found myself reading a little bit more about some of the subjects now I wouldn't have done before. So in that sense, it's done the job. But I think, yeah, so anyway, we'll move on from his reputation that. And the response. We might come back to it later, but I think we should
definitely cover that. I mean, I think it's important to set that out, because obviously, you know, the minute you sort of touch this subject or this particular individual, it does, you know, it opens this sort of can of worms because of that sort of thing. And he's obviously quite a divisive figure. But anyway, that aside, what did you think was the most sort of, I mean, have you seen most of it, you say?
I have, yeah. I've seen the bulk of it, but to be honest, I actually still think the first one was probably one of the more compelling ones, in terms of what, you know, we'll take it on face value in terms of the evidence there. So this was the one that obviously where on a
Gunung Padang,
exactly, Indonesia. the suggestion that in fact it was a, you know, much larger, not only much larger settlement, but also the fact that there were indications that it sort of was, you know, quote unquote, impossible for the time based on the structure, and also things like the rocks that were there that were actually nowhere, you know, not from the region and had to be moved a very long way because there are some sort of like volcanic rocks and that kind of thing, plus the, you know, seismic bit, which does get a little bit a bit interesting, which is sort of suggesting that there are actually chambers within the hill or within the mountain.
Yeah,
I would have quite liked them to have dug down there and found out. That would have been quite good.
Well, that I think that's the point, isn't it? I think that actually from a lot of the places he went to, I think the Indonesian one, he kind of, you get the feeling he got the best reception there. I think they'd be quite happy to have Netflix come and give them some money to go and dig down there, whereas some of the other sites like Göbekli Tepe, for instance, probably not so much. That's the impression I got. But the
what was your thought?
Yeah, I mean, again, the presentationally, I thought the CGI and everything, the recreation of what it looked like and the three sort of the chambers and all that sort of stuff was amazing. It was great to sort of visualize that, because obviously you look at it and you know, I mean, it's an incredible thing to look at, just, you know, from those opening scenes. It's just sort of all of these apparent columns just scattered around on top of this huge jungly mountain, which is quite impressive. And I mean, from a presentational point of view, I did quite like the sleight of hand, whereas obviously, you know, they're all sort of octagonal shape or whatever, they're hexagonal shaped, and that's the way the crystal forms basalt, I think it is, or something. But I like the fact that for a split second they led you to believe that they've been carved like that, and then he volunteers some science and refutes your preconception and says, no, this is natural. And then you sort of go, oh, hang on, he's not going to be pulling the wool over our eyes. He's fessed up to that one from the outset. Which you know, it might have gone over a lot of people's heads, but I noticed it straight away. Because it's kind of like I'm setting my stall out as a truth teller here from moment one. But anyway, I thought that was incredible. Really, I mean, you know, just, you know, obviously the rudimentary nature of that civilization. Why would they bother? You know, that's the point, isn't it? You'd have to ask yourself, there must be some higher purpose for that, you know, not necessarily a real one, but certainly widely believed. You just wouldn't bother. You know, especially if your main function is hunting and gathering. You know, you basically start the day looking for food and hopefully end the day having found it. I mean, and then start again.
Well, exactly. And I mean, obviously, the suggestion even in the show is that obviously it must be, well, the go-to is always it's ceremonial. It's essentially a temple, which people will obviously, even today, but obviously even back then, would have spent a disproportionate amount of time on, even though you're pretty much a hunter-gatherer and you never know where your next meal's coming from. Mm. So there's plenty of evidence of that. So I don't dispute the effort. It's just the scale of it, I suppose, is kind of why would you?
it's mind-boggling, isn't it? I mean, it's, you know, and also, you know, presume this civilization didn't have written communications or the ability to sort of draw up plans and all that sort of stuff. So, I mean, you know, at what point did someone say, right, that's finished now? That's the thing I think, like, you know, just a couple more blocks,
a bit more basalt.
Yeah, go and fetch some more from however. I can't remember how it is. A while since I watched the first one.
Quite a long. Well, yeah,
it's a long way away. It's
like, I'll see you in 3 weeks. Go get some more basalt.
Don't come back without any basalt.
But the interesting thing is that does it necessarily have to be a kind of, you know, quote unquote, kind of unknown civilization having done any of this, or is it simply that we just have misunderstood the level of knowledge and technology at that particular time?
Well, he says that if you follow the series through, that what happened was obviously there was this cataclysm at the end of the last ice age, which raised sea levels and sunk a lot of the landmass. Obviously, Indonesia is a series of islands now, but it used to be all part of a mainland called Sunderland, not to be confused with the city in the northeast of England. I think it's more Sunderland. So he thinks obviously there was a lot more connectivity before this cataclysm and all the rest of it, the Younger Dryas event. But he sort of says that then these emissaries from this lost advanced civilization went to various different places and introduced civilizing technologies and even laws and architecture and all of that sort of stuff. And you sort of find yourself thinking, well, it is quite compelling because, so many civilizations that are completely unconnected have these flood myths. But then on the other hand, my rational brain kicks in and I sort of say, well, water and fire are life-giving and life-taking elements, aren't they? They're going to cause you fear. But there seems to be something about one particular event that seems to have transcended most of these. There's a lot of similarities, and there's like someone arrives afterwards and all that sort of stuff to help them out and rebuild society. So whether that's Quetzalcoatl or Noah or whatever, really, it's so there is that, and you want to see those connections, I think.
I weirdly enough, I think the flood connected flood thing actually has more weight to it than the, very nice bunch of people wandering around giving technology and 'cause, let's face it, when most civilizations meet each other across history, it doesn't tend to be a lovely sharing of ideas for the most part. So I can definitely buy into that. I could actually, if he was literally, the show was just about this shared sort of story, this shared sort of, well, as he calls it, memory. Mm. I think I could probably get behind that a lot more than the idea of this kind of more advanced civilization then going around sharing technology with others. For me, it feels like it could be, for me, it's more just like lost history and misunderstood, and assumptions based on what we're seeing today. And that's obviously the core problem of archaeology in general, is you can only go by what you can see. And like, if things were lost, as in literally the evidence was lost, you're going to make assumptions based on what you can see in front of you. And it looks like, oh yeah, these were simple hunter-gatherers, we found some rudimentary tools. You just may not have found the things that were less rudimentary.
Yeah, why would they bother with that? Especially with they'd effectively, if we are to follow the established timeline, they built Göbekli Tepe before they started doing agriculture, which seems somehow the wrong way round to me.
Yeah,
you've got a secure food source, so now let's build some stuff with all these rocks rather than let's build some stuff with all the rocks. By the way, we're hungry, we need to get food as well, it seems. So there is that. There's definitely something awry with Göbekli Tepe, and it's fairly new on the scene in terms of archaeology. So I think it has upended a lot of their thinking, because it's always the sort of agriculture first and then megalith building kind of idea, but that proves that wasn't the case. So are people just weird? is that what it is?
They're weird now, so they were probably weird.
Yeah,
then.
Exactly.
I mean, humans aren't known for the for entirely rational behavior,
and that would be a completely irrational one, unless of course he's right and it was all built as a big warning and for a forthcoming cataclysm from the comets and floods and everything else. I mean, it fits in that sense, but then so would a lot of things if you wanted to kind of make them up and fit them in. But
hey, I always wonder what future civilizations will make of the Millennium Dome. So, kind of,
yes.
Why did they do this thing?
Well, I mean, now, it's all right now. It's a sort of it's a music venue, isn't it? But it's but in the at the outset, if they'd just left it as it was, God,
what a big tent.
Yeah. But the also, as a bit of an aside, I found myself getting slightly hungry watching a lot of these things. I mean, Gunung Padang sounds like or Gunung Padang sounds like something I've eaten. The Cholula Pyramid in Mexico. I mean, and then all the references to Turkey. I was just thinking, why are you doing this to me? But anyway, that was an impressive thing. The Cholula Pyramid. So that's episode two, I think. So that, I mean, that apparently is the largest structure ever anywhere. The one with the church on top, which is, you know, the typical kind of conquistador, we're the winners, build a church on top of it kind of mentality. Mm. I mean, that was another one with all the hidden caverns, but that was apparently built on top of a sacred spring, which is, so there's that water connection, which goes to the pyramids in Giza as well, and plenty of others, and the sort of dedication to Tlaloc, who's known as Chak in the Mayan sort of pantheon. But I don't know, it's like 1 minute I'm looking at it and it's quite compelling and I'm thinking, oh, this all sort of makes sense, and then again I sort of draw back and think, yeah, but he's connecting a lot of dots which aren't really connected here,
which is fine as long as you've then got you produce some evidence to back up your connections. And I think that's probably what's drawing a lot of the criticism, is it's quite surface, it's a surface reading. And I think if he actually came back with additional evidence and potentially some other sort of scientists backing him up, I think that would be better.
Yeah, it's a lot of stuff which seems to be just put in there, like the advanced civilization, how advanced. There's no discussion around how advanced they were. Were they on the level of, say, the Phoenicians or the Romans, medieval period? You know, were they more advanced than us? There's no time or space given to that. But you think if you've conjured this thing up, then you kind of owe it to us to explain, what you think they were like, how advanced they were. I mean, they would have been able to have circumnavigated the globe in ships, for instance, which is fairly advanced. I mean, the Romans couldn't do that. I think. If they'd have put their minds to it, they could have done it, but they obviously didn't need to, because everything pretty much within their wheelhouse was in the Mediterranean, the Near East, or, the massive extremity of Britannia. They didn't go any further than that, that we know of. But I think with their technology, they probably could have built ships. I mean, if you can build ships that can go from, Europe to the Americas in the 1400s, with the civilization that they had then, which I would think in many ways was inferior to Rome, despite being, hundreds of years later. Mm. There's no reason why they couldn't have done that, I suppose. So they could have been Roman level. They could have been. There's some sort of alternative history theories that the Greeks made it to the Americas and all of that sort of stuff as well, and mined copper and even had sort of semi-permanent colonies there and all that sort of stuff, although obviously nothing's been found really of any significance. I mean, but the Norse made it to the Americas in 1000 AD by sort of island hopping across the north from Iceland to Greenland to Baffin Island and all that sort of thing in Labrador in Canada. So I suppose they wouldn't have to be that advanced, really. I mean, a longship is a wonderful piece of, engineering, but it's not a super advanced way of traveling by any stretch of the imagination.
No. And that's kind of the point, isn't it? And also, so many of these things were made of wood. So anything made of wood is obviously long since gone. And you'd get very little evidence, because actually, you know, earlier civilizations, particularly the ones before they had kind of metallurgy and that kind of thing, everything's made out of wood and rope and a lot of other, you know, compostable, biodegradable.
Yeah, unless they'd ended up in a peat bog or something like that and been preserved. But you know, that's a bit sort of astronomical, really, isn't it? We've found a few of these, and they've been kind of million to one shots, really. Bog bodies and all that sort of stuff. Mm. But I know there's this, he does this thing, I think, where he preempts the criticism. I don't know if he's necessarily heard it so many times that he's just part of his sort of patter, or if he's kind of setting up a straw man to defeat. So one of them is the, where is all their trash kind of question, you know? So if there was an advanced civilization, why have we not found the equivalent of their Coke bottles and all of their rubbish, which wouldn't biodegrade for thousands of years? It's like, but, you know, his answer to that is, well, who's to say they're using plastics?
Yeah, exactly. I mean, but I mean, that is a, I probably would have said exactly the same thing to that particular criticism. It's kind of,
it's an easy one to defeat, though, isn't it? And that's the point. Is
it easy to defeat?
What came first, the rebuttal or the criticism?
Oh yeah, of course, of course. And he is very defensive.
But he is. I think that's to his detriment, because I think he's got this. I mean, I've followed his sort of career, I suppose, for a while, and I remember seeing interviews of him, you know, in the past when he sort of looked younger and had more hair, and I don't know why, he just seemed less believable then, you know, when they're older, they're kind of kindly old kindly old guy, and you sort of think, oh yeah, you're making a good point. And I think he could have leaned more into that but then maybe they're already eyeing a sort of second season where he's going to go into some more of these details with, you know, how advanced he thinks the civilization is and all that sort of stuff. But I mean, I don't know where else you can go, really, apart from there.
I mean, perhaps, I mean, it's just a slight aside, but off the back of this, I mean, he's done well out of me. I started reading his book, America Before.
Yeah.
So that I've only flicked through it so far, but funnily enough, the depth is very similar, right. I suppose. But again,
I've downloaded that. I've not started yet.
Yeah. So I mean, you know, the examples in there are very similar. Obviously, pretty much all of it is based on the whole of the Americas, so North and South America, suggesting that, again, it's the same, obviously, theory that they're, you know, giving various examples of how humans were inhabiting certain parts of it, or just obviously had greater technology than we, you know, assume they did. But again, they're kind of a little bit kind of leapy, I suppose. I mean, one of the examples is to do with in the Amazon. Basically, the man-made soil that they found in the Amazon with this really
terra preta.
Yeah, exactly. So they're saying that, like, it's well beyond that. It's you know, he claims that it's a complex collection of various things, like it's animal and human bodily waste, along with, like, you know, fish bones and household waste, so bits of kind of ceramics and that kind of
wet burning
thing.
And all that sort of stuff as well.
Yeah, and it was, so he claims that it has to be burned in a certain way,
yeah,
very specific, unusual way that you can't, it has to smolder instead of fully burn. And then he does, obviously, it's funny enough, he does exactly the same thing where he says, well, it could have been accidental.
Yeah,
you know, you could have just stumbled across it. But he then says, well, it's more likely that it was deliberate, and obviously, given that a lot of the soil in the Amazon was not particularly fertile, you'd have to develop something like that in order to have an efficient agricultural system.
Well, the term is that the Amazon's a garden, isn't it? It's not natural. It is man-made. It's the Amazon rainforest is a garden, according to, you know, people who subscribe to that sort of theory, because on its own, it is useless for kind of growing crops and things like that. I mean, obviously, yeah, you know, and I mean, obviously, it's for a different purpose. But that's why, you know, when they want to have the farming there, they just clear it all out, don't they? To our detriment. But I mean, that's yeah, that's one of the other things. He didn't really mention it that much in this series, did he? The Terra Praetor and all that sort of thing. That's because I remember seeing him talking about that on Joe Rogan. So I suppose he could sort of concentrate a lot more on the Amazon next time, because I know he's very keen into that, and he's certainly very, very keen on talking about all of the various substances that they use to communicate with, you know, whatever it is they're communicating with, advanced civilizations, their gods and all that sort of stuff, which is another one of his areas of interest, I suppose. But which one of the episodes that you've seen, you mentioned the first one, I mean, which ones have you found that have been a bit far-fetched, shall we say?
I mean, to be honest, after the first one, it kind of they kind of slipped a bit after that for me. I don't know. I don't know if I should pick a particular one. I think after the first one, I was just in the zone with it. I was just kind of going with it. I think, yeah. I was far more critical with the first one.
Yeah,
and then kind of assumed, I was like, okay, I know what I'm in for now. I mean, were there any particular ones that you thought you've gone absolutely mental?
What he has? No,
yeah, not you.
Well, I might have done. I think where he suffers is that rather than sort of pose some questions, point out some contradictions, and allow mainstream archaeology to react. Or allow the viewer to make up their minds or do their own research or whatever it is. He seems to have taken it upon himself, and I know he's been doing it for a number of years working on this kind of theory, but he seems to have taken it upon himself to have formed an entire narrative. And I, you know, from so what happened was, there was this advanced civilization where, you know, the world has reached its kind of, you know, zenith before. Then suddenly, you know, the Ice Age ended and everything went to pot, and all of the rivers and seas and everything, and swallowed up, you know, massive amounts of the land, which is true. The flooding, that is not necessarily the advanced civilization. But he then goes into the sort of the episodes in Turkey, with the underground sort of ant colony warren that they found, which is an incredible thing to see, but he sort of put that into how, you know, he sort of says that some of the temples, or indeed all of the temples, are aligned with Sirius in Malta, and that's a warning to future generations that the comets are going to come, and they're going to, so therefore that's the people in Turkey have dug under the ground and formed their underground city, and it's all kind of, and then this and then that and then this and then that, rather than, this is weird, isn't it? How do we explain that? We can't really. I have a bit of a theory about this particular thing, but he seems to have formed this entire, I mean, it's an incredible story. You know, it's very inventive, but it just strikes me as being something which didn't need to be like that. And each episode is kind of, it's like unpeeling an onion. You know, you sort of eat, you see a bit of the onion, and you go, that's all right. You know, with episode one, for instance, you go, wow, that's really believable. And, you know, that's very interesting and all that sort of thing. And then you kind of get sucked further and further in. And by the end, you know, you are believing that this, you know, the Göbekli Tepe pillars are star maps, and they're predicting when the next meteor is going to come. And I don't know if it's because I might have nodded off a bit here and there, but I've struggled to have followed that through to that conclusion based on what I saw.
And it is probably because it is just kind of, he is create, you know, he's obviously got, he's decided to take this slightly more sensationalist approach to it, obviously, and that's probably how he's got his Netflix documentary in the first place. And his the book I referenced earlier does exactly the same thing. And I mean, unfortunately, it had already popped into my mind, but the article I mentioned earlier, that was on unnamed newspaper's website, says that the show closely resembles the sort of half-baked documentary that one of the lesser Discovery channels would slap up at 3 a.m. You know, it's like, unfortunately, it does sort of turn into a bit of that. You know, it's like we're aliens at the first Thanksgiving kind of.
I was glad after watching the first episode that it didn't go full Ancient Aliens, because I was half expecting it might do. You know, sort of, how did this happen? Aliens, right? Next episode. So thankfully it didn't do that. But I mean, yeah, I don't want to criticize it too much, because I thought it was good, and I think it had, and I don't think it's dangerous like that article you referenced. No, claims.
That's insane.
I think that's crazy to say that. I think that's kind of more out there than his kind of theory, really, because I think he's, you know, he's devoted a lot of time to this. I don't think he's just in it for the cash, really, because he's, you know, whilst he's written a lot of books and they've done reasonably well, the most successful one he had, I think, was Fingerprints of the Gods or something. I think that was in the early 90s or something like that. So it was a bit of a sensation then, but obviously he kind of, you know, fallen out of the national consciousness for quite some time. I don't know if this concentration on America is hoping to, you know, reignite that, because obviously, you know, if you go on Joe Rogan, you can't just say all of this stuff's over there in Europe. You've got to have some stuff, you know, that tourists can go and have a look at closer to home, haven't you, really? So I don't know. I mean, I don't like to accuse him of cynicism in that sense. I think it's just, if you keep looking for something, you eventually start seeing it everywhere. And I think there's some of that.
Well, he comes across as a kind of person that, yeah, I don't think there's anything kind of sinister there. I think it's simply that he genuinely believes. I think he genuinely believes he stumbled across something that's amazing. And he's now obviously done quite, you know, reasonably well out of telling other people that. And I think, the problem is that leap of, you know, storytelling, which is tricky, isn't it? Because a story will draw people in and get people listening to it. And to the point that we made quite early on, it's kind of, it engages people in the subject matter and ideally gets people researching and that kind of thing. But then, of course, you're going to attract a lot of negative attention by doing that.
Yeah.
Which is a shame, because I think we've spoken.
The story's got to be good as well, hasn't it? And that's the point. So to engage people, you do have to do a bit of embellishment, possibly. So
the question is, would you have been as engaged? Well, maybe this is you're a bad example, but would this have been as engaging without the embellishment? If he was literally spent 8 episodes going to various places and going, there's a tiny bit of evidence that something is not quite what we think, and then moving on.
Yeah, I get your point. Obviously, it wouldn't have flowed as well either. And obviously, you know, there is that through line of his narrative, which is a great story. You know, I think hopefully that great story does lead people to see history in a more enlightened way, perhaps. But not necessarily his way. I definitely think that I wouldn't let the archaeologists, if we're going to lump them all into one category, obviously there are many with very different opinions on a lot of different things, and they, you know, they're not a homogenous group at all. But I think that some of the more established ones, for instance, probably do have some work to do in answering some of these questions now. I don't think they can ever really sit there and say, well, our work is done. You know, some of these places haven't even been properly carbon dated and all that sort of stuff. So, you know, and just sort of saying, well, there's no money or no funding for this. It's like, well, I think if you do think outside the box, you know, say we are going to refute these points made by Graham Hancock in this very well-received Netflix show, and we'd like to film a show of us doing that. I think they'd get funding for that. They'd certainly get crowdfunding for that.
I think they would, and I'm sure that, like, you've got me interested now, because now I almost want this kind of, I actually would quite like a sort of actual, you know, like a live debate between him and sort of one or more kind of, you know, so-called, from the so-called establishment if there is such, you know, the archaeology establishment. Yeah. Because I you know, and it's not obviously, you know, so you know, the burden of proof is on him. So, you know, he has to bring the evidence and then they can cross examine that evidence. But his argument is that they've, so this is coming from that particular book I reference, is he makes the argument that they big archaeology has already, a lot of them have already made up their minds and decided that the current version of the truth is done and dusted. We know, as in, like, you know, absolute truth.
Yeah.
This happened in this you know, in this century, and that's it. And it's kind of like, we're done now, you know, we can go home and we can sit back and think about something else. So that bit was interesting to me. I do wonder if there is a certain element of that kind of sitting back and going, well, we think we've come to the right conclusion, so we're very, very against opening the book back up on a particular subject.
Well, especially if you've made your name on that being the you know, the established rectitude of how things are. Hmm. You know, you're gonna, suddenly all your books are out of date and your theses are out of date, and and you know everything you knew to be true has crumbled before your eyes. I mean, I imagine that would be a disconcerting thing, especially for an expert. Which is probably why there is not exactly a clamour for them to do so. But I mean, I don't think there's a big conspiracy of archaeologists sitting there rubbing their hands together, knowing all this stuff, and, you know, sort of sweeping it under the carpet, really. But equally, I don't think he is completely doing this cynically. There's that middle ground, isn't there? It's kind of, you know, it's a search for the truth using very different methods. And it depends which side you want to fall down on, really. Do you want to follow the leaps and the bounds, or the possibly quite sclerotic established archaeology approach, and, you know, get the funding and sit in the trench with the toothbrush like Baldrick, you know, brushing some bones and pieces of pottery, which, you know, isn't as glamorous as flying to, you know, Gunung Padang and walking around in the jungles, and, you know, then going to Bimini and you know, having what looked like a really nice time doing some scuba diving and all the rest of it. So, you know, I mean, I suppose I'd have to be honest and say I'd probably prefer the latter.
Well, yeah, exactly. But yeah, I mean, I think it's an interesting idea. And I definitely want him to dig some more, but I want him to find some genuine, like I said, for example, in Gunung Padang, I want him to actually go into the mountain and find these chambers that the supposed, I mean, you know, the lovely CGI render shows it very clearly, but when you obviously you look at the,
and that's what stays, and that's what stays in your mind.
Well, exactly. You don't, but they did flash up the actual seismology image, and it was just a couple of blobs that could be, you know, they're supposedly empty spaces, but I'm no seismologist, but I'm sure there's a considerable
you do yourself down, sir.
You sure? I'm sure there's a considerable margin for error with these things, and like what looks like an empty space could be, you know, reflecting off of another type of material and that kind of thing. So
yeah,
you know, I think that, you know, I honestly thought at that point in the episode, they were going to literally go, right, we're now going to bore a tunnel into this thing.
They're going to winch him down.
Yeah, exactly. You know, feet first, straight down a tiny little borehole or something.
Yeah.
Great. With a GoPro slapped to his head.
I would have been all over that. I'm all about that. Hmm. But yeah, no, they didn't do that. But I think that's his best shot. I think those guys genuinely seemed quite happy to have him there.
I'm having a great time.
Some of the others looked a little bit, especially that snake shaped hill thing in, I can't remember what it was called now. I should have written it down. I couldn't be bothered. But the snake shaped hill, which is apparently in direct alignment with the constellation Pleiades or something. He wasn't allowed to film there because they disagree with his theories. I don't know if you got that far. Yeah, so there's a lot of sort of consternation and filming outside of a gate.
Right.
Yeah, a bit of drama, a nice bit of drama and controversy. So, but you know, if you're really rock solid in your theory, what difference does it make having poke around there, do some filming, really? What have you got to hide?
Yeah.
So, yeah, I think it's always good to let people, you know, if I was the archaeologist, again, the archaeologist, if I was them, I'd just say, fill your boots, mate. Go ahead. Film what you want, say what you want, and give you enough rope to kind of, you know, do yourself in, really. Whereas by creating this kind of barrier, this boundary, this, you know, we're not going to let you, it does, it immediately stokes that idea. Oh, what are you hiding? That's
I think he's drawn unnecessary levels of criticism. Like, I mean, I've seen other articles as well that are similarly kind of critical, but the one that I referenced was particularly scathing, sort of.
Yeah.
Well, that's sort of one of the lines in was like, why has this been allowed? Like, you know, it's sort of essentially implying that it's completely nonsense, and it exists entirely for the benefit of sort of, you know, the entertainment of conspiracy theorists, and it shouldn't have been allowed. It's like, well, no, because then that is, you know, literally a very unscientific approach. You're right. It's like, if he wants
censorship,
it's what it is. And it also, if he wants to gain funding from wherever he got funding for to go around doing all this stuff, that he can do that. And if you don't have to agree with him, and you can either ignore him or you can debate him or whatever, but you don't say this shouldn't be shown on a, you know, private you know, streaming service
that's funded by its viewers and its subscribers who are all voluntarily paying those subscriptions. But I mean, the point I would make as well, based on that, was even if it was just purely entertainment for conspiracy theorists, so what? Even if it was, so what? I mean, you know, I suppose if you're talking dangerous content, you could certainly do a lot more dangerous than, here are some old temples from history which I think are older than they say they are. It's like, fair enough.
Well, there's a lot of worse nonsense on.
It's not scary, Netflix, is it? No.
You know, it's like, you know, there's plenty of other random things on there that are far worse. It's just a very strange approach to take. And the thing is, if anything, it actually helps him out, because
it does. Yeah,
it kind of again makes it look like, you know, the he's establishment being silent, trying to shut him down. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah. Very weird.
Well, there we go. I suppose on that note, I think we've put that one to bed. Unless you watch the rest of the episodes and then come across anything else you want to talk about, we can always revisit.
We can always do a part two if there's more to say.
Absolutely. Well, good talking to you, Steve. And
you too.
I will bid you adieu.
Adios.
Adios. Bye, everyone. Thanks for watching. Don't forget to like, share, and most importantly, subscribe. Thank you for listening to this edition of the Hidden History Podcast with me, Paul Christian. Don't forget to rate and subscribe and share